Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
That ball's drilled high and deep to left field. Yiner Diaz gives the Astros a 3-2 lead in the ninth.
Ooh, I like it when that bartender's up late. Little Yiner bomb to finish things off.
Called third strike. He comes back and gets the save tonight. Brian Abreu coming off a big workload on Tuesday night. Saves the game on a Wednesday, and the Astros get a much-needed win with Yiner Diaz hitting the home run in the ninth. And Abreu picking up a big save.
Yeah, huge win in retrospect because the Mariners and Rangers both won. Man, this is a race. This is a race we've got going on. That was a huge win last night. Yiner with the home run in the top of the ninth after the lead was blown in the bottom of the eighth by the bullpen again. And Brian Abreu comes in, man. It's a hot topic on my Twitter timeline because of what I was espousing yesterday and last night.
A whole lot of told you so's.
A lot of told you so's after the third strike there that we heard. A lot of people like, oh, Sean, you're just stupid.
You're so dumb.
I put my schnutz out there before the ninth inning, not after the ninth inning. Like you cowards out there. How you doing this morning, my man?
I'm good. I did like Callis is accurate in saying after a big workload the previous night. It's not like he had a heroic, went three innings or something the night before.
30
like,
yeah, pitches.
He had a self-inflicted big workload the night before, and yet he came in and he made up for it.
He did.
Versus a very good baseball team in the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, people are acting like I tweeted last night before the ninth inning. Well, let me be clear. I tweeted last night after Abreu blew the lead. Again, he had his third outing where he gave up multiple runs in his last four outings before last night. He had given up at least a couple of earned runs in three of his last four outings. He'd been abjectly terrible for the last week and a half. And I said, man, you might want to think about, I wasn't the only one, you might want to think about moving Abreu back to the eighth inning and maybe letting somebody else try the ninth. I threw Kimbrell's name out there because, A, he's pitched the ninth inning his whole career pretty much.
Yeah.
And B, he's been, at least by ERA, he's been really good since he became an Astro. I had a lot of people throwing his expected ERA in my face last night after I said, before the ninth inning, I said, I don't know if I'd do Abreu here. I'd go Kimbrell here. And people thought I was the dumbest person in the world after Abreu gets the save. And to be clear, I was rooting for Brian Abreu to get the save. We'll hear from Joe Espada here in just a second on this. I was rooting for Brian Abreu to get the save. I'm an Astros fan. But come at me before the ninth inning, bro. Don't come at me after Brian Abreu gets the save.
I think the thing about Abreu is that a lot of people yesterday before the game were pointing out, hey, that was just his first blown save as a starter or as a closer. Let's not act like he's been a mess. Like, no, after two nights ago, he had a 8+ ERA in the ninth inning. It wasn't good. It was like saying, hey, that house has had a shaky foundation for a while, but this is the first time it's completely collapsed.
Yeah.
What are you even worried about?
But
I'm willing to think, look, obviously there's a psychological adjustment to being a closer, and that if it takes him some time to really get comfortable there, there might be another hiccup or two along the way. But if he can overcome that psychological hurdle, he's your best option as a closer.
Those people are being lazy, Seth, and here's why. That might have been the first outing he had labeled a blown save, but I believe the first one where he came in and he pooped the bed, it was tied, so it wasn't a save situation. The other one was he came in up 8-4, I think it was against the Yankees, and it was a very comfortable four-run lead until he made it a very uncomfortable one-run lead by giving up a three-run homer, I think, to Cody Bellinger in that game. So just because it's labeled a blown save doesn't make the other outings, doesn't justify giving up three earned runs in two other outings. Like, he's been bad.
saves are the dumbest stat. One of the dumbest stats. Kind of like pitcher wins are largely a
pitcher wins are
stat
way dumber. Pitcher wins are way dumber.
Saves are still kind of dumb in that it just feels anytime there's a stat that you always have to explain it before or afterwards. Kind of like plus minus in basketball. Or like, well, you know, you can use them when they serve you. But regardless, it was a good performance by Bray last night without having to relitigate everything. And you know, Sean, you've been very open and transparent. I think with your emotional connection to Abreu is a lot like Abreu himself.
Yep.
It's a little
very
bit unstable.
Yes.
Yeah. You there's a lot of things you like about him, but you're just not always sure that you can depend on him.
I think you framed it perfectly. Here was Joe Espada. So let's just lay it out. Yiner Diaz hits the home run in the top of the ninth. My theory on that, Seth, is there was nobody on base, so naturally somebody was going to get a big hit. If there were runners on second and third, Yiner would have grounded out to second base, but there was nobody on base. The Astros are great when there's nobody on base. So he hits a solo home run. Astros win 3-2. Boy, you got a great outing from Jason Alexander. We'll hear from Espada about that in headlines. I think Abreu getting this save is the bigger story just because of how bad he's been, and Josh Hader is not going to be available for the rest of the regular season. Here was Joe Espada on the decision to bring back Brian Abreu last night after he threw 30 pitches the night before.
If he wasn't able to go today, I would not have used him. But he felt good. I was only going to use him on a save opportunity, which it was. When Yiner Diaz hit that home run, I felt really good.
Okay. So Joe, and he said that he had a talk with Abreu before the game, tell him he still felt confident in him.
How much I trust him. People, you know, we have had really good closers here. Haters, Presley. And he's the one that always goes unnoticed. But to get to those guys, you need a very strong foundation, bridge. And Abreu has been that guy. When the game is on the line, I want him on the mound. I'm always counting the outs when it's Abreu time. That's how much I trust him. And I was just telling him, and I want him to hear from me, you know, face to face. I told him before, but after last night, I really want him to reinforce that again, that he is the man when the game is on the line.
You know, I think if I were running a Major League Baseball team, which, you know, it's still in the cards. I've still got some life left in me.
I would be a season ticket holder for that team, for sure.
This is what I think I would insist upon. I think I would insist on all of my Spanish, my Latin American players, that they not learn English. Like, I specifically want you to be in as much of a silo as possible. Because, that interaction between Espada and Abreu, where, you know, he can say, hey, we trust you, we believe in you, it's not likely clouded by nearly as much. Like, the guys aren't, even if they speak English, but they're not great English speakers or whatever, they just don't have to hear all of the chatter.
Yeah,
you know, they're
yeah.
just not going to, there's not, the volume of chatter and outside noise is less likely to penetrate their psyche. So you can just say, hey, this is all that matters right here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to be hearing it from their cousin in Topeka or whatever. That Espada's trust and faith is all that matters in that moment.
You would have an entire team of people that don't speak English is what you would have.
Yes, that's what I would. Well, yeah. I wouldn't actually go out specifically and try to do that. But I would use it to my advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Bregman. Bregman at times. I don't need Bregman when he's slumping to be, you know, engaging with people in his DMs and everything on social media.
Bregman wants all the smoke. He went out and learned Spanish once he got into the big leagues. He's like,
I don't have enough smoke. I need to seek out Latin American
smoke. I'm
going to
learn French. I'm going to learn German. I'm going to get smoke from the entire globe. Yes.
He's on some Venezuelan website seeking out the haters to try to shut him down. Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's it's a little too much for the modern athlete sometimes.
How about Jason Alexander, man? How about Jason Alexander has become one of the most valuable Astros since the beginning of August?
Is he an English speaker?
I believe he speaks English, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if he speaks
Spanish.
I don't
even try to learn these guys anymore.
Yeah.
I don't even try to know anything about him. Like, okay, his name's Jason Alexander, but for all I know, he's from Colombia. Whatever. Roll him in there. He's the latest Astros pitcher that's going to get the best version of himself because of this analytics and coaching staff.
Yeah. And then get an inflamed elbow. That's why I was wondering, if you don't want to establish an emotional attachment because you know how the story ends for all these guys.
Sean, henceforth, you and I will be doing this show in Gaelic. and nothing different.
Okay.
You and I are going to go take an intensive Gaelic class.
And we're not going to refer to any of the pitchers by name. They're just, they're a number is all they are. Brandon Walter.
Yeah, I want to be. I want to be ethnically and culturally blind on all of this. Okay, I can feel all of my unconscious biases seeping in. I know I'm a cracker ass bigot. I gotta just. Yeah, I want.
6:09 a.m. Cracker ass bigot came out. Here we go.
CAB radio.
CAB. No, just the news yesterday with the Astros was like. I think you've said that we're kind of desensitized to it now. Like Brandon Walter and this Rooney guy that they called up at some point. Both
Matt
had
Rooney.
They both had elbow surgery yesterday.
He's my favorite Ecuadorian.
They both. I don't know if they had elbow surgery or it was announced they were getting elbow surgery. Spencer Arrighetti, this kind of flew under the radar, seeking a second opinion.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I don't like that.
I always love the second opinion.
I don't like that at all.
Second opinion is always awesome. Yeah. How often do we hear a second opinion that comes back like, in actuality, things are just fine. Yeah.
Ort and Sousa, they're on the IL. Wisniewski and Blanco both out. I was kind of taking the tally yesterday, just the carnage in the pitching staff this year. It's unbelievable. It is. It feels like every year over the last 3 years, we've come into spring training saying, well, the injury luck. And the pitching staff can't be any worse than it was the year before. They just have to have better luck. And this, I've never seen anything like this. There's a guy every 5 days that gets elbow inflammation. It's unbelievable.
It's freaking nuts, man.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
And it's really hard for me. I mean, the hardest thing to accept sometimes in life, not just sports, is that sometimes things are just random dumb luck. Going into this season, the Astros didn't necessarily have a boatload more UCL injuries and other organizations, but they've been hit hard in the last 18 months or so, and I just hope that it's somehow weirdly dumb luck. It's just so strange that the organization that's known for just doing so many things better than other organizations with their pitchers is getting hit with just this bad stretch of hopefully just really, really bad luck.
Yep. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. We're getting you ready for the Texans and the Buccaneers on Monday. Monday Night Football coming to Houston. First time since 2018, a Monday Night home game. I think the last time we had a Monday Night home game was either the Dallas game or it might have been the Bob McNair night, the night where Lamar Miller had that 97-yard home run and Vandy gave us a, that was for you, Bob. I think.
And Sean, the last time the Bucs beat the Texans was at home back in 2003.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Many of our listeners, they weren't even a sperm or an ovum at that point.
Neither.
You
were.
You were
on the team. You were
not even a twinkle. Yeah, I was on IR, so I take no. I bear no blame. I take no. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my fault.
Yo no responsabilio.
That's it.
That's
it. All right, we'll get you updated on the Texans injury situation at one particular very important position in the next segment. We'll do headlines a little later on in the show as well. Yeah.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to give an update on this because I know that I know a lot of you contributed to this yesterday. So want everybody to know what the outcome was of our efforts to raise money for the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation, where I don't know if the text is if the mechanism is still there to donate. If you want to try new books, all one word to 41444. We raised a lot of money yesterday to get books in the hands of kids who don't have books in their home, trying to advance literacy at a young age so that we don't have as much crime and mental health issues at an older age. We know literacy is tied to all those things. $46,000 the cluster raised yesterday. Ooh. So that's not just Sports Radio 610. That's the other stations in our cluster, 100.3 The Bull, Mix 96.5, The Spot 95.7, and then Mega 101, our Latino station, and $46,000 across the cluster. So that means that 1,533 kids will get home libraries later on this
school year. It's mucho libros.
Yes. Thank you, Spanish Seth. Yes.
Yeah.
It is. It's good stuff. A lot of books. A lot of books. It's really cool. They get to pick their own books out. I've been to some of the book distribution events and stuff. It's a great event. Thank you to everybody who donated. If you still want to donate, I think new books to 41444 should get the job done. Or just Google Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. I'm sure there's a button to donate on their website as well. You look like you're about to say something. Because you opened your mouth.
I was when I said mucho libros, I was I was just having an existential dilemma. I was just thinking about maybe I'm going to be more like AJ Hawk on this show. I was just going to let you talk most of the time, and just every now and then just throw in something like that.
Don't do that.
Would you be cool with that?
No. No, I would not.
I don't know if my words are going to work right today. I had a rough night of sleep. I'm kind of hanging on by a string right now. And I'm trying not to slowly spiral out of control today. But I think I will, and I am going to keep talking through it, and it might end up being a brilliant disaster. So everybody stay tuned.
Stay tuned. That's the big thing. You don't know what Seth is going to say. And that's the key. You never know.
I'm very, very, very close to just lashing out at anything and everything.
Oh,
okay.
Now I'm frightened.
I spent 47 minutes crafting a text at 2:30 a.m. trying to keep it from sounding aggressive or passive aggressive, and all of the breaks in my brain have been worn away down to the, we're metal on metal right now, okay? On my restrictor plate.
That wasn't, you and I were on a group text last night. That wasn't the...
Oh, no. That wasn't at Meltzer.
Meltzer were on a text last night. Meltzer was just asking for NFL podcasts to listen to, and I'm hearing you right now. I'm like, I didn't read your text, but I'm like, boy, did Seth get passive aggressive about a... NFL podcast text. Yeah.
I sent that out at like 4 a.m., I think.
Okay.
You know what it is interesting when it comes to the NFL stuff and everything? People ask me a question sometimes on a Wednesday or Thursday about something that happened on Sunday, them thinking that I know what I'm talking about. say about the Jaguars game, the Jags-Panthers game.
Yep.
It's a reminder that I'm... Theoretically, this is my full-time job. There's a lot of people out there that just want the basics, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
Meltzer was asking for just a good podcast that just gives a basic, comprehensive look at the league every week.
Yeah.
And I gave him some suggestions. Clearly, you should just listen to Payne and Pendergast every day.
That's what I say,
But yeah, it's a reminder that, a lot of people, most people who probably spend a little less time on this stuff. Just want some of the basic info.
And you're a resource. They see you as a resource. Guy's got a radio show. He's got a YouTube channel. He's out there all the time talking football.
You know what happens in the week one of the season every single year is I get that moment where I feel like I don't know anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much stuff out there now. And all the advanced stats, most of which are crap, but you got to read the articles. It's a little bit of an overflow.
Well, there's so much stuff that's going to end up being phony, too, in week one. You know, like some of these quarterback, we'll talk about it later in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Some of these quarterback performances.
Including this Texans-Rams game where, I think a lot of people rush to judgment, understandably so, and say, well, look, you struggled against the Rams and they're not even that good a team. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I think they might end up being a really good team if Stafford can stay healthy.
Yeah.
And if you take that game and you put it in week 13 of the regular season and it plays out exactly like it did, it's like you might very well after that game be saying like, wow, that is two great defenses battling it out and they got the better of Stroud, but my God, what a battle between two really good teams.
Yeah, that we could see that matchup again in February, Bob, thing.
You just don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah.
This was D'Amico Ryans. This was on Tuesday. His update on the injury situation with the team. We'll tell you how it ended up playing out yesterday administratively.
Just start off just the injury update. Stan Stover hurt his foot, so he'll miss some time. Really hate that. He's playing tough, physical, exactly how we want it done. So he'll miss some time, so we'll have to upgrade our tight end room from that perspective. Andrews rolled his ankle, so he'll be day-to-day, see how that goes. Berrios and Kirk are doing well on their recovery. We'll see how they go this week. No timetable set right now for those guys.
So we'll get more clarity on those last two guys today when they have to put out an injury report. Cade Stover goes to the IR yesterday.
Right.
So he'll miss at least four games.
And Harrison Bryant, elevated. It makes sense. He's a guy that can – he's a utility tight end, and you can use him as a blocker. You can use him for some targets. But really the Berrios and Kirk thing, when I went back and, you know, rewatching more and more of the game from last week, I think that there's a couple things going on. One is that I don't think understandably so, C.J. Stroud trusts Jalen Nowell as much as he would trust Christian Kirk. There was one play where C.J. had a clean pocket, wasn't under duress. He pulled it down and ran for a first down, but he had a really easy read to Jalen Nowell, who was behind the linebackers, underneath the safeties, and just that was the read. Like, you could throw it to Jalen Nowell there, and it's there. But he just – maybe the timing was off a little bit, whatever it was. CJ chose to run instead. And then there were other instances in the game where, you know, I think there's a good chance that the rookie receivers just either weren't making the right decisions on choice routes or just the timing wasn't quite right. That stuff's going to get better. I think Higgins did some really good things in the game, but when you've got two rookies out there, you saw a lot more of Higgins and Nowell. That was at least one reason for things being a little bit disjointed. So Christian Kirk or Braxton Berrios being back in there, I think could help a lot very quickly.
What did you see when you watched it from Nico Collins? Did he deserve more than five targets in this game based on how open he got?
Okay, I don't – it's complicated. He was open plenty of times.
Yeah.
It wasn't that the Rams were double-teaming him or what have you. But it was just kind of one of those circumstances where there were times where Nico was wide open and yet the pass protection was breaking down. And there were other times where the pass protection was great and that, like, Nico was just running into his zone and it really wasn't the right decision. So could Stroud have made a different decision a couple times? Yes. But in the sum total of it, I'm looking at times where, there was usually a fly in the ointment. And so I'm not overly worried about it. And I do think that part of it too is if the process is that you're not focused on Nico Collins as much and you are trying to spread the ball around, I like that process. And it's just going to take a little time. There were a lot of positives to take from this game on the offensive side of the ball, but they're going up against a defense that has a really, really good pass rush. And you've got a reshuffled offensive line. And depending on what emotional state you're in, it can either look exactly like it did last year and you're sick of it, or, okay, first game with a new offensive coordinator and a bunch of new moving parts, we can really build off of this.
Yeah.
So it really just depends on how much coffee you've had this morning or whether you got in an argument with one of your kids last night.
Yes.
I like, it could go either way at this point.
Oh, so it's a blue dress, gold dress situation again, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were some moments where, man, there was one play they blitzed the defensive back off the edge, and CJ made a good decision, threw it to Dalton Schultz. You know, it was like, you know, throw into the teeth of the blitz, but this was as Nico was just coming wide open over the middle.
Yep.
I'm not like, what am I going to do? I can't expect CJ to sit there and know for sure that, oh yeah, I'm going to get tagged in the ribs and let this fly downfield.
Yep.
While also trying to be careful with the ball.
Well, and we've been saying all off season, like, yeah, he needs to learn how to take a profit when it's there, that kind of thing too.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. There were just a few instances in that game where I think CJ chose the better. He chose
safer.
Conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't fault him for that when I think that's part of the maturation of a quarterback is learning how to walk that fine line.
Is it too cliche to say they're going to try to get Nico established early in this game on Monday? Like, try to get the ball in his hands any way that you can after him only touching the ball three times in this past game?
I think maybe a little bit, just in that, all right, if that's what you decide to do, but that's what the Bucks figure you're going to try to do,
yeah.
and they double Nico more,
yeah.
That, all right, you got to go elsewhere with it, and that's where the complimentary part of it comes in.
Yeah,
it was just all, it's really, the pass protection wasn't awesome. I mean, CJ, under pressure, though, he was brilliant.
9 of 10 yeah. for 108 yards.
And as it goes with CJ, a lot of times on the TV copy, you don't really appreciate how good some of the throws are.
Yeah.
But one of those completions to Nico, I mean, he's got pressure right up in his face, and he's throwing it off as he's falling away. And it was beautiful. I almost felt like, yeah, maybe they should just let guys in every time.
Yeah, there's a faction of CJ ain't it guys out there that have started to crop up here in week one. And probably, if we're being honest, we're probably cropping up in the second half of last season too. And they're coming back out of the woodwork here. And I'm like, I know they didn't score a touchdown. I don't know how you can watch that game on Sunday and say that he's the main problem going on with the offense right now.
Right, right. And in some of the problems too, where some of those opportunities were with Nico, was when there were miscommunications either from CJ or on the offensive line, or Damian Pierce perhaps making a mental error. I don't know if it was or not on his part, but there was some unawareness going on out there that it feels like last year.
Yeah.
And that's where the test with Nick Caley begins, is if Nick Caley were an established offensive coordinator, but this was his first year on the team, I would, I think you'd be like, oh, okay, well, look, yeah, they're working out the kinks. But it's Nick Caley who replaced the first-time offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And I get the justified either frustration or fear or trepidation that people have over watching the operation look a lot like it did last year. The real test is, unlike Bobby Slowick, can he make improvements over the next few weeks
and
get some of these things hammered out?
Yep, bingo. That's it. Here was Nick Caserio on Texans All Access a couple nights ago. If there's one thing the Texans need to do to win, what is it?
We just have to play Houston Texan football and just play disciplined football and focus on the little things. I mean, when you go back and look at some of the plays, I mean, if I was covering you man-to-man coverage and that was my assignment, my eyes are somewhere else,
right,
that leads to a big play. I mean, that's fixable. That's correctable. So the key is, as a player, don't try to do too much. Just do the things that you're coached to do. I think sometimes, especially on week one, you're so amped up, you're trying to do more than you really need to do. Just go out there and focus on your assignment each play, and then at the end of the game, hopefully look up the scoreboard, and we've had more good plays than they have.
Ironic that he says at the end of the game. I feel like he was describing the Jalen Petrie play at the end of the game right there. Like,
yeah,
keep your eyes in the right place. Don't get too amped up. Don't get too hyped. Don't let Puka Nacua get wide open for a 3rd-and-8 conversion to close out the game,
This was the part for me that was frustrating, because we talked all offseason about how, Jalen Petrie in the slot, he's not an ideal slot corner. The Rams, I feel like we're having the same discussions, because they played Puka Nacua in the slot more than he ever has in his entire career, and it ended up being an issue. Where that's relevant for this week's matchup versus the Bucks is that Ibuka, the rookie for the Bucks, played a whole bunch in the slot, and he's offset by Mike Evans.
And he was
good.
So just
like you had a Puka Nacua, Davante Adams dynamic, you've now got a Mike Evans and Emeka Buka. My gosh, this is a lot of Ukas in one sentence. Emeka Buka.
It's the new Jalen. Yeah.
I thought I had gotten past it when I was talking about Puka Nacua and Puna Ford being on the same team.
Yeah.
But now I got to talk about Puka Nacua and Emeka Ibuka at the same time.
Yeah, they should trade names. It should be Emeka Nacua and it should be Puka Ibuka. That Puka
Why did you
Ibuka,
just do that to me? Now I'm screwed.
Just say Ibuka. Just say his last name. Like, he's a one-word guy. Yeah.
So Ibuka plays in the slot a whole bunch. Okay, so one more positive that I saw from, a few of the rewatches is, I think that Nico and Matt Burke know that, Jalen Petrie's got some weaknesses when he's in the slot.
You would think.
I do think they're doing some things to disguise what his responsibilities are. I think there's a chance that there's times when, it's always dicey knowing for sure exactly what they're doing. One thing you can do is kind of make it look like a guy is following somebody in man and on the pre-snap with motion, and then all of a sudden, no, you're actually dropping off into zone. And I think the Texans are doing some of that stuff. So the good thing is, if you can just keep the quarterback off kilter enough that he doesn't feel like he can dial up exactly what he wants, there's that part of it. And then what Nick was talking about, I mean, some of it is just simple discipline and understanding the situation. That, hey, it's 3rd-and-8. It's 3rd-and-8. You got Matt Stafford back there. Maybe just back off on the run a little bit and don't be so hyper to hit the run, and just be sure that you're in position to cover Puka if he breaks on an out route.
Yep. All right, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 presented by Paramount+. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $2.50 a month. It's nothing. It's half a cup of coffee these days. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Headlines are up next. We will circle back to the Astros. Another huge performance from one of the most valuable Astros over the last month or two. We've got some Texans news. We've got a little NFL news. We got some really stupid NBA news as well that we'll get to in headlines coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Call third strike. He comes back and gets the save tonight. Brian Abreu coming off a big workload on Tuesday night. Saves the game on a Wednesday, and the Astros get a much-needed win with Yiner Diaz hitting the home run in the ninth. And Abreu picking up a big save.
Yeah, just a huge swing of the bat by Yiner Diaz. Home run in the ninth inning after the Astros had blown a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the eighth to the Blue Jays. It looked like it was going to be a second straight night of just a soul-crushing loss. And Yiner gets the home run in the top of the ninth. Credit Brian Abreu. Steadies the ship after a few bad outings over the last couple weeks. He comes in and is dominant in the ninth inning. Gets the save. The Astros win 3-2, and a good thing they won. Seattle wins. The Rangers win. Everybody wins in the AL West yesterday, so the race remains one game over Seattle and 2.5 over the Texas Rangers right now.
And the thing about that game, too, last night, aside from it, you know, ending up being closer than it had to be, is that, you know, Yiner was like 3 inches away from a home run on that double.
Yeah.
That was a weird moment last night. And then Cam Smith, when France got on base in the eighth, before they scored a run, but it was a play that I expected Cam Smith to make. I don't know how many stars of a catch it would have been or what have you, but they end up that end. You know, that was in the eighth inning. The overall performance, I felt a lot better about just then, even maybe what the scoreboard was.
And Jason Alexander, probably the player of the game, I would say, for the Astros. 7 innings, 3 hits. Here was Joe Espada on Jason Alexander's performance.
He does it. He finds a way to get people out. He keeps people off balance. He gets the ground balls where he needs them. He's been so good. He's resilient. He goes after hitters. He's not afraid of contact. Marvelous job.
And he sent it back out there for the seventh inning. Jason Alexander's cap has been around 6 innings. Sent him back out there for the seventh. Here was the thought on that decision.
He was going out there even if I had everybody was, you know, up. It was really, really good. He was staying in the corners. He was making third really good hitters, not comfortable in the batter's box. So it was an easy decision once, you know, the way he was executing all his pitches.
89 pitches. I mean, he probably could have thrown him back out there for the eighth if he wanted to, if he felt uncomfortable bringing anybody in from the bullpen. See, getting 7 innings from a starter for the Astros these days is a huge deal just based on all the arm issues and the taxing of the bullpen going on right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Hunter Brown going, how many? He had 112 pitches the other night. That's what you're going to need, obviously. We got De Los Santos and all these other guys coming in.
It feels like he's pitching every day for these guys.
I know. I know. I noticed that, ago. Sean.
Yeah.
It's been noticed.
Yep. So Astros this afternoon, we get some day baseball. 2 o'clock start today in Toronto. Astros will try to win this series. Meanwhile, the Texans, Cade Stover goes to the injured reserve. He will miss at least 4 games with a broken foot. No clear time frame on how long the team expects him to be out. D'Amico just said he's going to be out for a period of time. He said that on Tuesday. The team calls Harrison Bryant up from the practice squad. I would imagine that there might be another move coming here at tight end. I have to imagine Nick Caserio is scouring other rosters around the league, right? They still only have two tight ends on the 53-man roster.
They have two tight ends on the 53-man roster. One thing about the game on Sunday was that they played with three wide receivers, 11 personnel, 80% of the time. So even with Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz, they had two tight ends on the game day roster, and they didn't use them much at all. I don't know if maybe Cade's foot was bothering them at some point, and they just didn't realize it was a break. But you could look at this two ways. You could like, well, they can just go out and operate the way they did last week. But then you could also say, they didn't operate so hot last week.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would have preferred to see more multiple tight end sets. I had put the over-under on when we would hear about a trade for a tight end as 8 a.m. on Thursday,
okay,
which is today. So we've got a little bit of time left. But I would have taken the later. I don't know if that's the over or the under. I would have said later than that.
Yeah.
Just because of the – I expected Harrison Bryant to be the first guy called up, and then maybe after that Nick would be just kind of calling around, seeing what's available.
He could. I could see Jakob Johnson or Luke Lachey being a practice squad call-up the day of the game if they don't find another tight end. I mean, Jakob Johnson was –
Did they move Jakob back to the – practice squad?
He was a I think so. He was a day of the game call up from the practice squad. So he goes back down. They didn't call him up to the main roster. So he was a call up this past week. So it would stand to reason that he would be called. I'd like to see British Brooks get a call up. British Brooks is on the 53, I should say. I'd like to see him active for the game instead of inactive for the game on Monday. But we'll see. So that's the news with the Texans. The other news, they're back in practice today. Everything's pushed back a day, because they play on Monday night, and they'll be back in practice. So we'll get our first injury report of the week today. And I think the big thing there, Seth, is finding out what exactly is going on with Christian Kirk and or Braxton Berrios. I'll take one of them on Monday. I'll take one. Getting back both would be great. I would take one back on Monday.
I think one of those guys coming back would be really good. I think D'Amico on the coach's show on Texans All Access – basically saying, yeah, we want to use Nick Chubb more. Probably, and he didn't say it like we need to run the ball more. It sounded like he was saying, we need to see less of Damian and less of these other guys and more of Nick Chubb. So I would expect that Nick Chubb was completely healthy. He was a weird one, and I freaked somebody out yesterday inadvertently by saying I wanted to see the injury report, and I hope Nick Chubb's not on it. There's zero reason to expect that he's on it other than that he's an older running back.
Yeah, why would you say that?
I don't know. Because I'm prime. Sean, I'm kind of frazzled right now.
A lot of injuries.
Because of the Astros, okay?
Yeah, a lot of injuries.
I'm kind of in this mode where I'm expecting anything from anywhere at any time when it comes to the injury front.
Oh,
but so far,
God,
so good with Nick Chubb.
I'm shouting fire in a crowded theater over here. Let's look at you. Nick Chubb on the
injury. I just want to be sure everybody's ready.
Okay.
All right.
I got you. NFL news. The NFL has begun a review of the recent domestic violence allegations against Dolphins receiver Tyreek Hill. League, in a Wednesday afternoon email to Pro Football Talk, said, quote, it's standard policy for the league to review a matter such as this. You hadn't heard Tyreek Hill getting divorced from his wife, Keita Vaccaro, who I think is Kenny Vaccaro's sister, the former safety. She's accused Hill of 8 instances of domestic violence in a court filing submitted in connection with a divorce case. I'm not here to adjudicate the domestic violence. I am here to say I wouldn't be shocked if Tyreek Hill wants a trade 1 week into the season, because he wanted a trade last season and he wanted a trade in the offseason, and the Dolphins stink. And this would seem to complicate the Dolphins getting Tyreek Hill up and out of Miami if he starts asking for a trade again.
So I've had a hard time kind of separating the wheat from the chaff on all of the rumors about Tyreek Hill going back to the Chiefs. It seems like there's a whole bunch of insiders reporting that a trade could happen, theoretically, hypothetically. But I don't. You haven't seen anything actually substantive, have
no,
you?
No. I'm just assuming that Tyreek Hill is going to start agitating for a trade.
No, I know. I'm asking. Yeah. I am genuinely asking.
Have
you seen anything?
No.
Yeah.
Well, no. Probably the same stuff you're commenting on, which is he could go to the Chiefs or the Steelers.
That's where, like, Jeremy Fowler said that a trade could be low-hanging fruit for Kansas City. Like, all this stuff. So it's not an actual report. It's speculation.
That's right.
And yet, of all the teams that seem like they wouldn't care at all about the domestic violence issue or whatever, that's
Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs,
who
right?
drafted him back in the day. Yeah. So that's what's going on with Tyreek Hill. This might be the dumbest breaking news ever. that I've seen treated as if it's like a big deal yesterday. Like I'll just read Shams Charania's tweet on this here. That the NBA, Seth, they've adjusted their scoring rules.
Yeah.
No longer, new change for the upcoming season. Unsuccessful end of period heaves from, you know, half court or whatever for a three pointer. They will now be recorded as a missed field goal attempt for the team, not the individual player shooting the ball from half court or throwing it overhand from three quarter court. Those long heaves will no longer negatively impact players' shooting percentages.
This is the only question I had about this, because honestly, I think I'm probably in the unpopular minority on this. I think it makes sense. It is. It's a selfless act that you're doing that you get tagged for. It hurts your own individual stats when you know you got to do it, but there's very little chance of it going in. Do you not get credit? What if it does go in?
You get credit, probably, I would imagine.
That's the only part. Like, I feel like if you're going to take the shot and you don't get penalized for it if it doesn't go in, then you also shouldn't get credit for the three. That's the thing that's keeping me from endorsing this right now. That's where it feels you're kowtowing to egos a little bit too much.
These guys take 1,000 shots during this. I mean, I'm exaggerating.
Not everybody.
They take okay, but even the bench players take hundreds and hundreds of shots during the season. This means that somebody, maybe more than somebody, went to the league and said, hey, man, my shooting percentage last year was 0.423. Would have been 0.431 if I hadn't thrown these two half-court shots.
Okay, now, though, this is the thing. I think that it's usually a point guard. And if it's a 50%, it happens more frequently, I think, or sometimes doesn't happen. Like Shane Battier back in the day was known for, as selfless as he was, a lot of those shots at the end of the
right
half
after
were like, yeah, right after the buzzer hit. Yeah. Like you put on a good show of it, but it doesn't actually count.
I'm surprised you're on the side of the argument that you're on.
No, I feel like I've always thought for a long time, just I've known about that dynamic. I've put myself in that situation. It's one of those things where it's one of those situations where the unselfish guy gets unduly and unfairly punished, because there's a lot of guys that just won't even take the shot because they know it's going to hurt their stats. And I feel like it's the right thing to do.
Is anybody looking at the exact percentage these guys are shooting throughout the year to say whether they're a good shooter? Like Steph Curry,
it all adds up, Sean.
Man.
What it shows on? It shows on your three-point attempts. So you're going to tell me, and you don't take nearly as many threes as others. So if you do it, if it's six missed threes in a year, yeah, that could actually substantially change your percentage.
Okay, now we're just throwing a number. Now I need to know who had the most half-court end of quarter shots in the NBA last year. If the most that somebody had in the entire season was three, then this argument is moot. Three shots all year long. What are we doing?
I have zero issue for this. I feel like it's a little bit like a baseball type of scenario where you get a little bit of a pass on certain things.
Fair. You know what? Why I'm upset about it? Not upset, but you know why I'm agitated? Is it was treated like breaking news yesterday. Like it was a Shams Charania breaking news tweet about this. I'm like, this is a big deal that we're doing this?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a big deal. Yeah. It should have been hidden. They should have done this on like the day of the Super Bowl or something like that and just not even.
It should be something the announcers are mentioning as somebody's shooting it from half court. Like, hey, by the way, there's a rule change. Like Shams comes on and it's like the Kevin Durant trade. You know, it's breaking news. Yeah.
I actually sat down and thought about this, and I do think that I the biggest part of it for me is that I think that a lot of times it's one of those things where the most unselfish player is the one that's getting penalized for doing an unselfish thing.
Yeah.
And it's basically instead of just getting credit for being unselfish, he's actually penalized.
You're about the spirit of it. The spirit of it is we shouldn't punish guys.
If you're a player that takes 4 3-point shots in a game, but one of them is a heave at the end of the first half, I feel like it's unfair to say, oh, wow, look, he was 0 for 4 as opposed to 0 for 3 on 3.
We spent the most time on this topic in headlines. That's wild to me.
If you come out of a game, you've taken 4 three-point attempts, but one of them was a heave, but then you made one of the other ones.
Yeah.
It's the difference between, you know, being a 33% shooter versus a 25% shooter.
I know, and you and I always come in the next day looking at the box score going, aha, this guy was 1 for 4, not 1 for 3.
It's the way people operate. It is. It's sometimes people say, like, oh, you haven't been shooting well lately. You're shooting 40%. You're like, you're basing that on 10 shots, dude. What are you talking about?
Well, in the spirit of that, okay, the Texans' playoffs chances have plummeted. One game into the season. Are we buying that the Texans and the Colts have these respective chances?
We never overreact to small little glitches in numbers or anything.
We're going to do it for 20 minutes coming up next.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.